Thank you for the opportunity to speak again. And for those of you that were not here, I started on Wednesday evening. We're talking about the effects of technology on children. This is a little bit different than our maybe typical Bible study topic thing. However, I do see that it's quite relevant and all for us. The theme verse that I look to is 1 Chronicles 12 and verse 32, where it says, "And the children of Issachar were men that had understanding of the times to know what Israel ought to do." So these are the times that we live in, and so we need to try to understand them to know what we ought to do. Just a little bit of reminder of what I'm doing here. My goal, my intention, and what I'm giving is to be a conduit only, that I am giving you the research, the study, what I have done, and I'm giving that to you. I'm not even still today yet trying to or giving you what I think we should do. That's coming later. But I think we should do this first. Some of this message you may not like. I just ask you, I'm just the messenger. Don't shoot the messenger, even if you don't like the message, maybe. So anyway, I'm just trying to give you what I have found. There is a common view that says if something is not immoral or if it's not strictly forbidden in the scripture, then it's acceptable. In regard to, we've been talking about a screen-based childhood or a phone-based childhood. In regard to that, the data shows that that is false. So anyway, in regard to childhood, our culture has become screen-based. I appreciate what Micah just gave us there. He mentioned some about foundations. Childhood for the culture has become a screen-based or phone-based foundation. Now, we are not exactly aligned with the culture on that. However, we have made some movements that direction. So anyway, depending on how we want to go in the future, this information has a lot of impact on the future of us as a church. I started Wednesday night, I had a story. I have another story to start with now. Anyone ever heard of Rip Van Winkle? Anybody ever heard who that was there? Okay. Imagine that you fell into a deep sleep on June 28th, 2007. This is the day before the iPhone was released. Like Rip Van Winkle, you wake up 10 years later and you look around. The physical world looks pretty much the same, but people are behaving strangely. Nearly all of them are clutching a small glass and metal rectangle, and anytime they stop moving, they assume a hunched position and stare at it. They do this the moment they sit down on a train, on a plane, or an elevator, or stand in line. There is an eerie quiet in public places. Even babies are mesmerized by these rectangles. When you do hear people talking, they usually seem to be talking to themselves while wearing white earplugs. Abdu Murray refers to this as the device-dazzled gaze. Now, here's a quote for you to think about. "Childhood is an apprenticeship for learning the skills needed to be a successful adult." Now, let's unpack that just a little bit. That's either true or false. Childhood is an apprenticeship for learning the skills needed for success. Now, the apprenticeship method of learning is old. It is ancient. So think about that. Think about that has gone on for hundreds, literally even for, I think safe to say, a couple of thousand years of that being a way to learn. If that's a way to learn, anyway, are we doing that? Social media platforms are engineered for engagement. They hijack social learning, and they drown out the culture of family and local community while locking children's eyes onto influencers of questionable value. Here's another phrase you may not be familiar with. I was not, but there's one that's called the beginning of internet adulthood. And so some of the different researchers and writers who study this, they're talking about when is that a good time. There's not necessarily just a magic number. However, Jonathan Haidt, he says there are very good arguments for waiting until 18. And also, I do want to say that as far as like some of the things of the effects, of course, of internet and technology on children, there's adults, too, that this can overlap with also as well, to be fair. But however, for this discussion, all of this is focused on childhood and children. Early adolescence is guided by a child's experiences. We should be concerned about those experiences and not let strangers and algorithms choose them. Smartphones are a second kind of experience blocker. Once they enter a child's life, they push out or reduce other forms of non-phone-based experience. Once children begin spending much or most of their time online, the inputs to their developing brains became a torrent of stimulation. Okay, Jonathan Haidt also refers to something called the Great Rewiring. He says the Great Rewiring of childhood took place between 2010 and 2015 when most children and young people got a smartphone, that this totally changed our society and culture of the world. He says, I will tell the story of what happened when we transitioned from basic phones to smartphones. I'll present the evidence that a phone-based or a screen-based childhood that emerged in those years is bad for children, is bad for adolescents, and I'll show that the harm goes far beyond mental illness. Now, there are four foundational harms I'd like to run over. The first one is social deprivation. I have another little story to read with that. This writer says, one morning on a family trip in the year 2016, my six-year-old daughter was playing a video game on my iPad. She called out to me and said, Daddy, can you take the iPad away from me? I'm trying to take my eyes off, but I can't. My daughter was in the grip of a variable ratio reinforcement schedule administered by the game designers. Now, that's a big phrase. Let me explain that. That variable ratio reinforcement schedule is where behavior is rewarded after an unpredictable number of responses. A behavior is rewarded after an unpredictable number of responses. And he says she was in the grip of this. This is administered by game designers, which is the most powerful way to take control of a person's behavior short of planting electrodes in the brain. Now, in this room here, in this building, there is a whole lot of tools. There is men and people. We have a whole lot of tools that a whole lot of things. We can make stuff happen. Right behind me is an example of it here of the gym. And anyway, the people who manipulate human behavior, they have tools in their toolboxes also as well. And they are very skilled at using them. Impulse leads to pleasure. Pleasure becomes strengthened. Once pleasure is strengthened, there's something that is stamped in. Learning is the wearing smooth of a path in the brain. Learning is the wearing smooth of a path in the brain. Keep that phrase in mind whenever you see anyone, including yourself, making repetitive motions on a touch screen as if in a trance. Now, I need to tell you a little bit about my granddad. My granddad's name was Elmer. And from the old house, about 100 miles from here, from the old house he lived in, he had paths. He had a path from the house to the barn. He had a path from the house to the woodshed. He had a path from the house to the hidden house. He had a path from his house to the garden. He didn't have sidewalks. He had paths. Anyway, we have paths. Learning is the wearing smooth of a path in the brain. File that away. Part of the evidence of harm from the great rewiring. The rapid switch from flip phones to smartphones with high-speed internet and social media apps created the new phone-based or screen-based childhood. This laid down many new paths in the brain. Social media has been especially damaging to girls, including chronic social comparison and relational aggression. Boys have been withdrawing from the real world for a couple of decades now, and the great rewiring has encouraged habits that are exactly contrary to the accumulated wisdom of the world's religious traditions. Now, it used to be before 2010, in a lot of ways, our phones were kind of like a digital Swiss Army knife. That's sort of what they were like. After this 2010-2015 period, it changed. We used to pull them out like that Swiss Army knife to connect with people that we knew, but now it has changed to something that is called platforms. These platforms compete with other companies to see who can hold on to eyeballs the longest. The people with the least willpower and the greatest vulnerability to manipulation were, of course, children and adolescents, whose frontal cortexes were still highly underdeveloped. I read about this a lot. What this means is, there's MRI, brain scans, and all of this, but children and teenagers' brains are not 100% fully developed. Children have been drawn powerfully to screens ever since the advent of television, but they could not take those screens with them to school or when they went outside. Before the iPhone, there was a limit to the amount of screen time that a child could have. I remember that growing up. There was three channels on television when I grew up. At 10 o'clock, the 10 o'clock news came on, and at 10:30, the TV turned off. There was an expression that says, and the TV turned to snow. It would be this white, crackly, crunchy stuff. You could wake up in the middle of the night and turn the TV on. There was nothing to watch. But anyway, we now have 24/7 unlimited millions of apps that never stop. The explosion of smartphone-based apps marked a qualitative change in the nature of childhood. By the year 2015, more than 70% of American teens carried a touch screen around with them, and these screens became much better at holding their attention, even when they were with their friends. So, just to be clear, when you hear the term a phone-based childhood, this is all internet-connected devices, laptops, desktops, tablets, any of those things. The reason a lot of times I use the word phone-based, by far the phone that is the most popular one that is used. And also, when I use the term childhood, I'm speaking of children, adolescents, youth, anyone that is a minor. So for definition there. A transformational shift in the nature of social media happened at this time period. Facebook introduced the like button. This made viral content dissemination possible. With that, you could now, content could move so fast through so many, and that was a new thing. Social networking systems that had been structured for the most part to connect people to other people that you knew turned into social media platforms that were redesigned in such a way that they encouraged public performances online. People were doing this in search of validation, and not just from your friends anymore, but now also from strangers. Okay, there's something called the opportunity cost of a phone-based childhood. Really, the opportunity cost of everything. So right now, this morning, Sunday morning, you have come here, you have given up anything else that you could do because you traded that to come here. Everything has an opportunity cost with it. Suppose a salesman in an electronics store told you he had a new product for your daughter. That would be very entertaining. No harmful side effects of any kind, but also no more benefits than entertainment. So how much would this product be worth to you? So when the salesman tells you that the product is free, you ask about the opportunity cost. How much time does the average child spend using the product? And you learn these numbers. For the average teen age 13 to 18, it's closer to 50 hours a week. Now, according to the IRS, that would be plenty enough to equal a full-time job. At that point, wouldn't you walk out of the store? Those numbers, 6 to 8 hours a day, are what average teens are spending on screen-based activities. This does not include homework. Okay, the data shows as internet-based activities have increased, guess what decreased? Something called reading books. There has been a direct correlation with that even ever since television, but it's still reached a new level. That as that increase, reading books has decreased. What does Proverbs tell us? Proverbs tells us to get knowledge, get wisdom, get understanding. Not all, but one of the ways that we get that is through the reading of good literature. The Pew Research Center finds that a third of teens say that they are online almost constantly. One third. So those that are online, excuse me, that means that they are not fully present in whatever is going on around them. It's like they're here, but they're not here. Henry David Thoreau wrote in 1854 that the cost of a thing is the amount of life which is required to be exchanged for it. Okay. Harm number one, social deprivation. Children need time. Do you know that also one of the complaints that I read about of things is children complaining that their parents won't get off their phone enough to talk to them and be with them. There's a whole lot of that I read about also too, that's part of children's complaints. Children need to be with people to have social development. The members of Generation Z is age 29 and under, began socially distancing themselves as soon as they got their first smartphones. Of course, teens at that time might not have thought they were losing their friends. They thought they were just moving their friendship over to Instagram or to Snapchat. Isn't that just as good? Here's another researcher. Her name's a little bit hard to pronounce, but anyway, she has shown that teens who spend more time using social media have an increase of depression and anxiety. Sitting alone in your bedroom, consuming a bottomless feed of other people's content, or playing endless hours of video games with a shifting cast of friends and strangers, or posting your own comment and waiting for others to respond to it or like it is so far from what children need that these activities should not be considered healthy new forms of adolescent interaction. The social deprivation caused by the great rewiring, because even with teens are within a few feet of their friends, their phone-based childhood damages the quality of their time together. Smartphones grab our attention so powerfully that if they merely vibrate in our pockets for a tenth of a second, many of us will interrupt a face-to-face conversation. We usually don't tell the other person to stop talking. We just pull out our phone, spend some time pecking at it, and leaving the other person to conclude, reasonably, that they are less important than whatever the latest notification was. That's what was just communicated. When a conversation partner pulls out a phone, or when a phone is merely visible, and it doesn't even have to be your own phone, the quality and intimacy of a social interaction is reduced. As screen-based technologies move out of our pockets and onto our wrist and into headsets and goggles, our ability to pay full attention to others is likely to deteriorate further. So anyway, we're not done yet. There's more coming. So what do we want to do? The great rewiring has devastated the social lives of the Generation Z by connecting them to everyone in the world and disconnecting them to the people around them. Number two, sleep deprivation. Sleep-deprived teens cannot concentrate, focus, or remember, as well as teens who get sufficient sleep. Their learning and their grades suffer. Their reaction times, decision-making, motor skills suffer. This elevates the risk of accidents. They are more irritable and anxious throughout the day, so their relationships suffer. Now, you can say, why are you bringing up sleep deprivation? I just saw a truckload of Red Bull go down the road. That's what we got that for, and that'll take care of everything. Have you ever been to the funeral of somebody who fell asleep at the wheel? It's serious. Anyway, sleep, there is no substitute for sleep. It's part of health. It's part of what we need. David says in the Psalms, he says, I laid me down and I slept. I awake, for the Lord sustained me. He also, in Psalms, it says, he gives sleep to his beloved. It's documented evidence that the internet-based life is, people are losing lots and lots of sleep from that. Is it just a coincidence, or is there evidence directly linking the upsurge in sleep problems to the arrival of the phone-based childhood? There's a lot of evidence. The sleep disturbances were greatest for those who were surfing the internet in bed. And it's not just social media on smartphones that has disturbed it. Sleep deprivation has increased by the ease of access to other highly stimulating activities such as mobile gaming and video streaming. Here's a quote from the CEO of Netflix, and I quote, think about it. When you watch a show from Netflix, you get addicted to it. When you get addicted, you stay up late at night. We are competing with sleep. So they know that, and they're doing quite well at it as well. When your sleep is disturbed, you're more likely to become depressed. When screens are allowed in bedrooms, however, many children will use them late into the night, especially if they have a small screen that they can use under the blanket. Harm number three, attention fragmentation. So that's a big word, but attention fragmentation just means the ability to focus or not focus. This was one of the things of how I started looking down this path of trying to find some answers even for myself. I have had a challenge trying to hire a human being who can focus for 8 hours on a job. There is some, but it seemed to me that it's getting hard. Okay, Jonathan Haidt, who is a teacher, he's a college professor, he says here, I thought about this when I talked to my students a few years ago about how their phones were affecting their productivity, but the situation was far worse than I had imagined. Most of my students get alerts from dozens of apps, including messaging apps, social media apps, and a variety of news sites that ping them with breaking news, and also notices about politics and about sports and about the romantic lives of celebrities. And they're set to vibrate with an alert every time an email message arrives. When you add it all up, the number of notifications on young people's phones, according to one study, was 192 a day. That is one every 5 minutes. And we're still only talking about the average teen. If you talk about heavy users, that number is going to go up. Attention is a choice that we make to stay on one task, one line of thinking, one mental road, even as attractive off-ramps beckon us. This is part of maturity. Staying focused, the ability to have attention. When we fail to make that choice and allow ourselves to be frequently sidetracked, we end up in the confused, dazed, and scatterbrained state. Staying on one road got much harder when the internet arrived. It reduced the ability to focus and reflect because we now crave a constant stream of stimulation. A buzzing smartphone is deadly for concentration. Every app is an off-ramp. Every notification is a Las Vegas-style sign calling out to you to turn the wheel, tap here, and I'll tell you what someone just said about you. And no matter how hard it is for an adult to stay committed to one mental road, it is far harder for children and adolescents to say no to these off-ramps. Here is another article I found interesting. The title of this was called Brain Drain. Brain Drain. Even when we don't check our phones, the mere presence of a phone damages the ability to think. Even when we don't check our phones, the mere presence of one damages the ability to think. This data here showed that if a phone is in your pocket or in your purse, this hinders something that is called cognitive capacity. Okay, cognitive, that just has to do with mental, your brain, your mind. So it's saying this hinders that. If the phone comes out of the pocket or out of the purse, then it goes up even more. When adolescents have continuous access to a smartphone at these developmentally sensitive ages, this interferes with their maturing ability to focus. So their brain develops throughout childhood. There is a bit of an acceleration period, say from age 9 to 15. One of the main skills that children and adolescents are expected to develop is something called executive function. Now, executive function, all that is the ability to make plans, to do something, A, B, C, 1, 2, 3, and then carry out those plans and stay focused on it till it's completed. That's what executive function is. Executive function skills are slow to develop because they come from that part of the brain that has not yet fully developed. Skills essential for this include self-control, focus, and the ability to resist off-ramps. A phone-based childhood interferes with the development of executive function. Number 4, addiction. Now, I talked a little bit about tools in the toolbox, and I want to go back to that again. The people who are, this is their living, is to, they study human behavior, they study how it works, and then they use what they learn to manipulate those things as well. The apps that we have and the social media things, they are by design, and they are designed to make people stay there as long as possible. Here's a book from the year 2014 from a writer. This book was called Hooked, How to Build Habit-Forming Products. I like the title of that. One thing I want you to know, too, is that you all have a target on you. If you could paint, if I could paint a bullseye on you, you've got one on you. And as soon as you are looking for anything, then you start to get those algorithms and things where you get those feeds that it's like, this is what that person is interested in, and that comes back to you. There is no off-ramp in an app with a bottomless feed. Think about that. There is no off-ramp. There is no signal to stop. This was interesting about, anybody heard of the Facebook files? This came out in 2021. We know that Facebook intentionally hooked teens using these behaviorist techniques thanks to the Facebook files. That was a trove of intellectual documents and screenshots of presentations that came out by a whistleblower, Francis Hogan, in 2021. So basically what was going on in the inner circle of Facebook, they were plotting, planning how to use neuroscience, how to use all of these mind things to keep their users on there more and longer. They do not love your children. I can tell you, they love those greenback dollars of dead presidents is what they love. There's a section in there titled Teen Fundamentals, which delves into the neuroscience of all about, yeah, how this works. They show MRI images of brain scans. Here's a quote from the here, from this Facebook file. The teenage brain is usually about 80% mature. The rest of the 20% is not. At this time, teens are highly dependent on emotions and the reward system. Those are the things that reign supreme. They know this. They know it. They know what they're doing. Teen decisions are behavior are mainly driven by emotion, the intrigue of novelty, and reward. While these may all seem positive, they make teens very vulnerable at the elevated levels that they operate on. Anybody ever heard of a book called Dopamine Nation? This was written by Stanford University researcher Anna Lemke. She explains how addiction plays out in her patients who suffer from addictions to anything and everything. She says that after the year 2010, she began to treat teenagers who had digital addictions. That was a new development for her. She also says this, there are universal symptoms of withdrawal from an addictive substance. They are anxiety, irritability, insomnia, can't sleep, and dysphoria. Dysphoria is the opposite of euphoria. It refers to a generalized feeling of discomfort or unease. This is basically what many teens say they feel, and parents and clinicians observe, when they are separated from their phones. Lemke's list of the universal symptoms of withdrawal shows us how addiction magnifies these other foundational harms. Most obviously, those who are addicted to screen-based activities have more trouble falling asleep because of direct competition with sleep, but also because the blue light that comes off of it that's delivered to the retina from just inches away, that tells your brain that it's morning time. Also, while most people wake up several times during the night, fall right back to sleep, that's normal. You roll over, go back to sleep. People who have become addicted will often reach to their phones and start scrolling. Anna Lemke writes this, "The smartphone is the modern-day hypodermic needle, delivering digital dopamine 24/7 for a wired generation." Her metaphor helps to explain why the transition to a phone-based, screen-based childhood has been so devastating and why the crisis showed up when it did. Now, adolescents prior to this, the 1990s and so forth there, they had access to other kind of addictive activities on home computers, and some of them did get addicted. But after the great rewiring happened, and they could carry all these devices with them 24/7, they could and they did. Imagine a sleep-deprived, anxious, irritable, and socially isolated student who is trying to do their homework as the off-ramps beckon from their phone lying face up on the desk. Their executive abilities are impaired. They strain to keep focused on their schoolwork. They do for a minute or two or three. Their consciousness is fragmented. They become confused, dazed, and scatterbrained. All of this is the opposite of attention and focus. When we gave children and adolescents smartphones in the early 2010s, we gave companies the ability to apply that variable ratio reinforcement schedule all day long, training them during some of their sensitive years. These companies have developed deep pathways into our children's brains. I think my time is, my time is up. This is good here. Okay. I have some more things from the Surgeon General in 2023 has given some warnings for us. I also have some information on how social media has harmed girls, how that it has harmed boys. They have taken, it has affected them differently. They have taken different paths on this journey, but they've ended up in the same ditch. I have information on that also as well. So anyway, thank you. Yeah, thank you for your time, your attention there. I think I can finish this maybe in another half hour, maybe. So if you want to hear more, let me know. I want to leave you this with just one quote, though, also. So a lot, some of this, I know this is negative. I know a lot of this is negative, especially the thing about paths, that learning is the laying down of paths in the brain. I want to also say it can work positive. Here's a quote from George Mueller. Intimate knowledge of God is possible if we habitually search His holy scriptures and translate what we find into obedience. So if it works negative, it also can work positive. Intimate knowledge of God is possible if we habitually search His holy scriptures and translate what we find into obedience. Thank you.